your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Now, we've got quite a show this evening. There's a lot been happening in Washington and all over the country. And Donald Trump has been out on rallies. There's been some elections this week. There was one in Ohio where they found 170 people that were over 115 years old. My gosh, what kind of cheating is going on there? We're going to play a series of clips and then comments before and after. We have this Candace Owens clip coming up first, and she was harassed in a breakfast at a breakfast restaurant. And I mean, this is where some of these extreme groups are beginning to come in and disrupt people when they're out there trying to have breakfast together with their friends. Anyway, listen to this and see what you think, okay?
Welcome back. Well, targeting conservatives, Turning Point USA's Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens are attacked by left-wing protesters while trying to have breakfast at a Philadelphia coffee shop. Watch this. Joining us right now, let's detail all of it and tell us what happened. Candace Owens is Turning Point USA's communications director. And Candace, it's good to see you this morning. You've been so incredibly articulate about what's going on. That must have been scary for you. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so we were eating at this restaurant, and there was a group of four individuals that were bearing the Antifa decal all over their clothing and on their backpack. So we recognized they were in Antifa, and they instantly recognized Charlie and I, and they were whispering amongst themselves. Looking back, there was quite some distance between us. They were on the opposite side of the restaurant, but we didn't think anything of it. They recognized us. We recognized them. I guess they sent out a bat signal, if you will, to the local Antifa chapter, and they all came within 20 minutes. There were about 25 to 30 protesters outside on the streets.
What do they want? What are they protesting?
Just us being conservative. You're not allowed to be a conservative thinker and eat breakfast publicly, apparently. We've done nothing. We said nothing. I think the restaurant owner was shocked. At that moment, when they realized that their friends had arrived, they shouted at us in the restaurant, calling us Nazis and fascists. And I said, do you realize I'm a black woman? You're calling me a Nazi. I said, are we not allowed to eat here because we're conservative? And we walked outside of the restaurant pretty quickly, and then they were barricading us. And fortunately, the police must have seen them assembling a crowd very quickly, and they created a barrier between us and them. This is an all-black police force, all minority police force, so it was a jarring sight to see because, as you guys know, Antifa is a white gang.
You know what's incredible to me? No comment. Crickets on the left. Crickets from the Democrats or the left who've actually seen this and are constantly talking about the right and the Republicans who are, you know, upsetting the public peace. Have you heard anything about this from anybody on the left to say this is wrong, what just happened to you?
Well, Maria, this is what they wanted. This is what Maxine Waters called for. She wanted people that support Trump to be approached in restaurants, approached on the streets. Exactly what she called for is what happened at this restaurant yesterday. So we're not too shocked by their silence. We are just shocked at how violent it's grown. You know, in the past, we've seen one person approach somebody that supports Donald Trump or somebody that's in Trump's cabinet. This was 30 people that assembled. And if the police weren't there, God knows what would have happened.
It's not just organization, Candace. It's also funding.
Yes.
Do you have any sense of who is funneling money to these groups, who is organizing them? Because, again, it speaks to big money, does it not?
Correct. They're obviously funded. This was 8 a.m. in the morning. I don't know how 30 individuals were able to get off work. This clearly was their job. Many people have said that this is funded by George Soros. I have no information to say that that's true or that's false, and we definitely haven't looked into it. But I think it's time that we do, that we understand who is funding these people. People are said that Antifa protesters are paid $20 per an hour in cities. So that could be true. That could be false. That obviously wasn't my number one concern yesterday, but I think that it needs to now become at the forefront of the conversation amongst conservatives to figure out who is funding these people.
You know, first it was shaming. First it was shaming online, all getting together to try to make someone feel uncomfortable or inadequate by the shaming and the name-calling. But as this president has increasing good outcomes from some of his policies, they're getting completely unhinged. It's getting worse.
It is. And I think my particular presence obviously annoys them because I'm a black American. And we had that Rasmussen poll released last week, which showed that Donald Trump's support from black Americans has doubled since this time last year. And that is quite remarkable. It's because black America is waking up. We are starting to understand that it is the left that is angry. It is the left that is violent. And it is traditionally and still the Democrats that are racist.
Has this kind of thing happened to you in other places? Was this the first time that you get confronted this way, or is it becoming a regular thing?
So we are always confronted on college campuses. That's what we do at Turning Point USA. We go and we speak about conservative values, free markets, and capitalism on college campuses. And as you know, you cannot be a conservative speaker on a college campus today. So we are often confronted with Black Lives Matter protesters and Antifa, but we expect them when we bring security. Yeah. That was the first time that I've ever been confronted like that in a public space. And to have it be that many people, especially, was a bit overwhelming. And the thing I was concerned about the most is they were screaming in my ear with a bullhorn. What they're trying to do is get you to react. They're whistling in your ear, and that's very loud. You know, it really affects your eardrums to hear that much noise at this distance. So
they know exactly what they can get away with.
Right.
Throwing water on you guys. Not going to get arrested for that. Putting a bullhorn right next to your head, screaming at you, getting this close to your face. As long as they don't touch you, they're not going to jail. It is incredibly insidious.
Correct.
What is going on?
Well, it's great that the police were able to react so quickly. You did not call the police. They just happened to be around, or did the restaurant owner?
What I know, the restaurant owner was shocked, and I know that he had given a statement to some media, but I think what happened was maybe one police officer was nearby, saw a bunch of people throwing food at the window, because first they were throwing food at us while we were eating inside, and they likely called other police officers to arrive, because more kept showing up as we were outside. And as I said, all minority police force being shouted at by an all-white gang who were calling us race traitors and saying that all police are racist.
I've said this over and over again. Intolerance, hate, and violence in the name of tolerance.
Right.
That's what I can't. I don't know when does
they hide behind it.
When does this snap? When do people get sick of this?
To me, I feel that it's not going to be until somebody dies. The left refuses to come out and speak against this. The left refuses. The Democrats have not come out and said anything. This has got to be the most viral video online and on the news. It's been the most discussed story. They have said absolutely nothing. And as I said, it's because they condone this behavior. This is their gang.
And they make it like thuggery. I mean, they just want to gang up on people.
Correct. Imagine if a bunch of people in MAGA hats and Make America Great Again hats saw a black liberal in a restaurant and said, "You can't eat here, get out." And they started with a bullhorn to her face. This would be wall-to-wall coverage on every network, and we would never hear the end of it. But
you're
that's
right.
Because they have decided that racism is okay, violence and harassment is okay, so long as it's against conservatives.
That's exactly right. That's why it's okay that the leadership at the FBI and the DOJ completely abused their power. It's okay. It was against Trump.
That's correct. This
Candace,
is how they think.
Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for sharing what happened to you. Candace Owens joining us there.
Poor things are really getting out of hand sometimes, aren't they? The people shouldn't be bothering others out there. And this used to not happen until Donald Trump won, and then the opposition led by Hillary and her gang started creating a lot of hate with Alinsky systems of, you know, techniques and so forth. But anyway, coming up next is an interview with Tom Fitton, and he's the head of Judicial Watch, and he gives us some very, very good insights. And what Judicial Watch has been having trouble getting, they had to sue the government to get documents. Now, what's happening out here when our own government won't relinquish to some of these watching groups documents they should readily be providing them under a Freedom of Information request? But anyway, this is Tom Fitton, and he's got some very valuable insights to tell us about what's going on.
But new information discovered by Judicial Watch showing the involvement of the FBI in helping push the Trump dossier, which you'll remember was largely funded by the Clinton campaign and was filled with Russian disinformation that was meant to discredit not Hillary Clinton, but Mr. Trump. So is Mr. Mueller investigating that side of the Russian collusion story? Here now is Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch President. Tom, great to see you. Let's first talk about what you got. It was heavily redacted, but does it show definitively that the FBI was actually paying one of the authors of the Trump dossier?
Well, Christopher Steele, who was hired by Fusion GPS, who had been hired by the Clinton campaign and DNC, met with the FBI at least 13 times in 2016. 11 of those times resulted in payments to Mr. Steele. So in the middle of the Clinton-Trump campaign, the Clinton agent for Fusion GPS, Christopher Steele, who was talking to Russia intelligence about Trump, supposedly, was meeting repeatedly with the FBI.
Well, Tom,
now, they don't give us details about those meetings, though.
This is what Bob Mueller was set up to do, was to investigate real Russian collusion. This seems to be far more credible as evidence of Russian collusion than anything that the Trump campaign did.
Well, you know, and as disturbingly, in November, they deemed him not useful as a confidential human source anymore. Yet they continued to tell the court his information was reliable in terms of getting those FISA warrants, spy warrants, on Carter Page and the Trump team. Real abuse, and I think the FBI, who at the FBI was meeting with him, we don't know. Was it
right.
Peter Strzok? Did James Comey know that this Clinton campaign agent was in the FBI at least a dozen times in 2016? And that doesn't count the times he and his people were meeting through his wife, Nellie Orr, Bruce Orr, at the Justice Department after he was cut off, supposedly, by
right.
the FBI.
Well, there's another point, Tom. Forgive me for interrupting, but this meeting that everybody's talking about between Donald Trump Jr. and the Russian agent, that Russian agent met before and after the Trump Jr. meeting with members of Fusion GPS. What was that all about? I mean, if there was collusion between her and the Trump campaign, there was also collusion between her and the Hillary campaign through Fusion.
Fusion GPS was working for Russian fronts to discredit a critic of the Putin regime, and the lawyer involved in that effort was the lawyer behind the meeting at Trump Tower.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling what went on, and for the Mueller operation to focus solely on Trump collusion shows you that there's this politicization
right.
of the special counsel operation.
Tom, I have to jump to the final point, because we heard Adam Schiff at the beginning suggest that the Russians are now interfering on Donald Trump's side with the 2018 midterm elections. But if anything, it's exactly the opposite again. We got that Facebook story last week. They took down some of the sites that clearly had some apparently Russian influence in them. And they were anti-Trump. There was one showing Donald Trump screaming in front of a Nazi flag. That's one of the ones that was taken down. There are others that send protesters to anti-ICE rallies. If there was Russian collusion with anybody in the United States, it was against Trump, not in favor of him.
You know, there's this idea that they want to divide America. No, they want to attack our government. They're attacking the Trump administration. During the campaign, they thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, and they attacked the Hillary Clinton campaign knowing or thinking, like everyone else in America or many people in America, that she was going to become president. The Russians are interested in undermining our government. And they were doing it in 2016. They're doing it again.
That's the bottom line. No matter who they have to go after, they're just trying to undermine our government and our way of life. Tom Fitton, thank you for uncovering this, Tom. Appreciate it.
See, right there, it's proving that we can't even get the documents without suing our own government. I mean, what is happening out here? What's happening is that the corruption is so high that they're covering up their own, wrongdoing. Next is a couple of Devin Nunes being interviewed by Sean Hannity. And the first one is his full vindication of what he's been doing. The second one is an update. So anyway, I'm going to put play the first one and give you some comments on it, and then we'll go back and play the second one after that and further give you some further comments. Thanks for listening, and listen to this carefully. Here we go now. This is Devin Nunes.
All right, joining us now with a reaction to my opening monologue, my interview with Carter Page, is the House Intel Committee Chairman, California Congressman Devin Nunes. Congressman, the Nunes memo has now been totally, completely corroborated by you. And people like Adam Schiff, to me, have been proven to be one of the biggest liars in the country. I won't drag you into politics, that political commentary. Let me get your reaction. Number one, it was the bulk of information used to get a FISA warrant. Clinton's dirty dossier, full of Russian lies. You just heard Carter Page. Your thoughts?
Start with, most people in the media never even bothered to read our three-page memo that was designed to be just a short compilation to protect sources and methods, because we only wanted to get out the main points, which were what? That they used the dossier, the dirt, from the Clinton campaign to make up the bulk of the FISA application. Matter of fact, they lead with it in the FISA application. So that's what we really wanted to get out to the American people, because we believed at that time that most Americans would agree, and I think they would agree if journalism wasn't so dead, as you said in your monologue. Most Americans, when you talk to them, when they're not watching the other cable news networks, and you talk to them about, is it okay for me as a politician to go out and pay someone to dig up dirt on my opposing candidate, whether it's running for president or governor or something else, and then feed it into the FBI, an FBI that's controlled by my own party. That only happens in Banana Republic. So that was the point of the memo. And it's sad that the media has failed to cover it. But what's even more surprising now is, now that we've been totally vindicated with the release of this FISA, just the pieces of the FISA applications over the weekend, you continue to see the media, they're going absolutely crazy. And I've never seen anything like it, and I think you're, like you said, journalism's dead in this country, and I don't know what to do about it.
You know, what is ironic in all of this is Hillary funnels money through a law firm. They hire an op research firm, and I have no problem with op research, that's politics. Then they hire a foreign national. I thought foreign nationals weren't supposed to impact our elections. But the dossier, according to Steele himself, in an interrogatory in Great Britain, he says it's raw intelligence, never verified, never corroborated. But everybody that signed off on that warrant signed off on unverified, uncorroborated Russian lies that were literally designed to really steal an election after they rigged an investigation into what is irrefutable crimes, incontrovertible evidence of obstruction and a violation of the Patriot Act by Hillary. Well, I'm just wondering, where is this? How does our constitutional republic survive?
Well, it cannot survive without a free and open press actually doing their job, right? So let's just talk about the obvious thing that's out there that you're alluding to, and that is that the very thing that the Mueller investigation is all about is seeing if the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to get dirt on Hillary and use it against her. Now, we actually know that is exactly what Hillary Clinton did. Hillary Clinton paid people, went through intermediaries that got dirt from Russians to use it against Donald Trump.
Yeah,
that's what happened. So let's start there. But then let's go with some of the other nonsense that you're seeing now. You actually have people out there in the media, mainstream media, that are now talking about, well, the regs don't necessarily say that you have to verify all the evidence. Well, look, I think that's crazy talk. You absolutely should have to verify and validate the evidence that you're using to have probable cause when you go to a secret court to spy on an American citizen.
But they fed the court Russian lies bought and paid for by the opposition candidate, and they purposely didn't inform the court. No court would have approved these warrants if they knew the truth.
They went out of their way not to do it. So that's another point that they've been trying to make. So they went out of their way. Instead of just saying, look, candidate two paid for this dirt on candidate one. Candidate two would have been Hillary Clinton. That would have been a very simple way to describe it in the FISA application before the judge. Now, here's something else that actually my colleagues, Mr. Gowdy and Mr. Ratcliffe from Texas, who did a lot of these FISA warrants in his career, and has had the opportunity to look at these in quite detail. He continually makes the point, which is a very good one, it's not so much how wrong it is, what they put into the FISA applications. That's really bad. But what's even worse is the exculpatory evidence that they left on the cutting room floor. So, wow. For example, there's something really important. If you had the information that you have with Bruce Orr, okay, who's at the heart of this because his wife was working for Fusion GPS, the Bruce Orr information, he knew that Christopher Steele didn't like Trump and didn't want Trump to win. The FBI had that in September.
His wife helped put it together.
That's right.
What you did is to help this Democratic Republic survive. I actually worry about this abuse of power. I worry about a corrupt media. We're not going to stop on this program. Thank you for all you've done, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I'm afraid, Bruce, boy, that was something. I'm afraid that the level of corruption is on many levels, and many people have had their, you know, hand in the cookie jar, and they're stealing money. They're plundering our treasury, our U.S. treasury, and other levels of government, all the way down to the lowest level. So this is what we're up against. We're up against trying to reform a system that's been highly corrupted on multiple levels. Now, here's another one with Devin Nunes giving us an update. And this is really insightful. So listen carefully here. Here we go now. Devin Nunes.
Also today, Daily Caller, our own Sarah Carter, reporting the DOJ is refusing to preserve work-related emails from the former FBI director, Jim Comey's private account. Wow, I wonder if they do that for you or me. Now, we reached out to the DOJ for comment. They declined. Here with more reaction, House Intelligence Committee Chairman, California Congressman Devin Nunes, who frankly deserves the Medal of Freedom for really showing, sadly, the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal. Let's just get your general take on everything and where we are and what is important now.
Thank you, Sean, and thanks for having me on again. Where we're at, a lot of people ask, well, what's left? We still have information that we need from the Department of Justice. However, I will say, as of tonight, we are getting closer and closer to having the information that we need.
Tell us why.
One of the big issues that they have provided, they have allowed all the issues that were in our subpoena, they have now either we've been able to review, our investigators have been able to review, or they have been delivered to the committee in one form or fashion or another. So let's put that aside. There's still more that has to be done, and we're, of course, months and months late. So where are we? We talked about this last week. We have at least 20 pages of the FISA, the FISA warrant that went after Carter Page. We have about 20 pages that the House Republicans have asked several months ago for the president and his office to declassify. We need that declassified. Senator Grassley, secondly, ask for the Bruce Orr 302s. Bruce Orr is going to become more and more important in this investigation.
Explain a 302
I think people should pay
and
close attention
altered,
to it.
Explain a 302, which is an official report. Were they altered?
So the FBI interviewed Bruce Orr at least a dozen times and put together reports. So once they fired Steele, which at that point they should have not been meeting with him anymore, but what they had is they had Bruce Orr, whose wife Nellie Orr was working for Fusion GPS, was going to meet and still get the information from Christopher Steele as they were trying to verify this unverified dossier or the Clinton dirt that was used to get the FISA warrant. So that's number two. Number three, there is exculpatory evidence that we have seen of classified documents that need to be declassified. These were not, when I say exculpatory
in nature, in what way? I don't mean to press you. Exculpatory in what way?
In that the Carter Page FISA, when the judges should have been presented with this exculpatory evidence that the FBI and DOJ had. So those are the three areas that we have left in terms of what we need declassified.
I've been hearing rumors of a tape and potentially Intel service involvement in all of this. Is there any truth to that?
Well, that I think gets to the origins of the investigation, which we still are unclear on whether or not. We know that the Australian diplomat that was serving in London
We were told that it was Five Eyes intelligence that was used to go after Papadopoulos. What we discovered in our investigation is what there was no Five Eyes intelligence, and in fact, Downer's story, the Australian diplomat, doesn't even make any sense. So we're still trying to follow up on that. But in the big picture here, we need these documents declassified. That has to get done. We just talked
there was
about
a report by,
secondly,
by
we have about
Paul Sperry that might happen. I'm running out of time, and I want to get this in. This is very important. I just played the tape, the April 2017 tape of your colleague, Adam Schiff. I won't add my commentary to your comments. And it sounds like he's colluding with Russians for dirt on Donald Trump. And wasn't the phony dossier that Hillary and the DNC paid for, wasn't that full of Russian lies? And it was used to misinform the American people. He got a FISA warrant, as your memo pointed out, and the Grassley Graham memo pointed out, the bulk of information for the dossier for the FISA.
Yeah, well, look, if it would have been up to the Democrats, they were in on this from the beginning. So was the media, Sean. The media in 2016 had all this information, too. So they know that this information was being generated by the Clinton campaign. You had DOJ, FBI, all those cast of characters that were meeting regularly with Christopher Steele. You have Bruce Orr, the number four at the Department of Justice, who I think is going to become a more and more important figure in this. And a lot of the investigators and reporters should be looking closer at Bruce Orr.
Appreciate your time. This is soon, maybe this week. That's what rumors I'm hearing. Good to see you, sir.
Coming up next, we have some information on Senator Feinstein and the people wanted for assistance that used to do her driving. He's turned out to be a Chinese spy. We don't know how deeply involved he was. And she said he had no classified access, but it remains to be seen how much damage that this man did. Here we go on the Lou Dobbs show, an interview about Senator Feinstein's spy. Okay, here we go now.
President Trump took aim at Senator Dianne Feinstein at an Ohio rally over the weekend. The Democrat rocked by recent revelations her office had been infiltrated by a Chinese spy who worked for her for nearly 20 years.
And speaking of China, it's just come out that the Democratic leader and the leader of the Russian investigation, Dianne Feinstein, had a Chinese spy as her driver for 20 years. And she's leading the Russian investigation, if that's what you call it. How about leading? No, she's leading the Russian witch hunt. A Democrat-inspired witch hunt.
And we have breaking news for you tonight. The Daily Caller is now reporting the identity of Feinstein's so-called Chinese driver. It turns out he was quite a bit more than a driver. Joining us tonight, Daily Caller's investigative reporter, Luke Rosiak. Luke, great to have you with us. And this is remarkable. The identity first of the spy who worked, quote-unquote, as Feinstein put it, as a driver for 20 years.
This is a guy named Russell Lowe, L-E-W-E. He's a Chinese-American who was her office manager for 20 years, so he's not a low-level guy. That's
Did you say office manager?
He was office manager in San Francisco. So he was higher up. He was meeting with ambassadors. He was, attending high-profile events. He was not a gopher. He was not just a mere driver, as Feinstein characterized him.
Well, perhaps she mischaracterized or misremembered. That's quite a different matter. And as office manager, he would have access to all sorts of information, as well as the comings and goings of Dianne Feinstein, who served as a chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for years and years.
Yeah, and as a driver, because that was part of his capacity, presumably, he was in a position to overhear pretty much more than anything.
Right.
And as you heard in Donald Trump's kind of clip, she basically shrugged about this when it came out. When the FBI told her that this guy was working with the Chinese government, she didn't tell anyone. She didn't even tell her own staff. She just let him retire. So when you look at that tweet, she says, oh, well, the Chinese were approaching my guy, but I made sure he didn't work here anymore. They weren't approaching him. They were working with him. And she let him, she phrases that carefully because she didn't even fire this guy. This guy retired with a pension. He is now working at what appears to me to be a propaganda outfit in San Francisco pushing dirt on Japan. So this isn't a guy that was merely recruited by China. He's a sort of a player in these geopolitical warfare battles, sort of this militant Chinese guy who's professionally involved in this kind of thing. And he's out there actually continuing to make speeches where he is billed as a former aid to Dianne Feinstein. And that's what happens when you cover up things like that. The people get to go ride your coattails and continue to associate with you. He's not disgraced. He's still out there actually meeting. He met with a congressman, Mike Honda, recently. He's still associating with these Washington types. He's still part of the political scene because Dianne Feinstein did not take swift action.
And his name again?
Russell Lowe, L-O-W-E.
It's amazing. Chinese-American, still in San Francisco, and without, belaboring the point, where in the world are our intelligence agencies? They are the ones who informed Feinstein of his, that he had handlers, not just simply, people with whom he had little conversations, had handlers from the Chinese government driving his efforts.
Right, and when you witness a cover-up like this, who knows what you can believe, but the limited information that we've heard is that they said, okay, he stole political information, but not national intelligence, so we're not going to prosecute him, which, by the way, of course you can prosecute. The FBI finds ways of prosecuting people when they want to. For one thing, you could presumably charge him with the Foreign Agent Registration Act, just like Manafort. But what the sense that I get is that Feinstein told them, hey, there's no need to prosecute this, let's just make it go away quietly, and the FBI was happy to do her bidding.
Well, it's almost presages the Comey struggles between gross negligence for in the investigation of Hillary Clinton and landing on, instead of gross negligence, extreme carelessness, which did not mandate prosecution. He said it turns out that that's a false, if you will, choice and not true at all. Let's go to Feinstein's tweet responding to the president, calling her out. This is Feinstein's response to the Trump tweets. The FBI told me, she acknowledges, 5 years ago it had concerns that China was seeking to recruit an administrative member of my California staff despite no access to sensitive information. I took those concerns seriously, learned the facts, and made sure the employee left my office immediately. Well, now that sounds absolutely casual and harmless. No threats, no secret, access to secret information. But again, it wasn't a driver either. It was her office manager.
Well, keep in mind the way that, she didn't express any outrage here. Cognitive dissonance is enough to make your head explode. I thought we cared about meddling. I thought we cared about national security and classified information. And when it happens to the Democrats, as it has time and time again, they kind of just take such a casual attitude. Remember, Feinstein was the one who, when the Intelligence Community Inspector General, Charles McCullough, who was an Obama appointee, he was kind of the one who actually found classified information on Hillary's secret emails. Server. And he said that he was bullied by Dianne Feinstein until he dropped it, which is a pretty huge deal.
And another huge deal. She's not unacquainted with huge deals. Remember, it was Senator Feinstein as chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee when it was discovered that John Brennan's CIA had been surveilling the committee's servers. First, he denied it. So they not only spied on the Senate Intelligence Committee, which has oversight responsibility in addition to everything else, if that wasn't bad enough, they were in charge of oversight. He denied doing so, then had to admit he did, and then she said, well, we're not going to prosecute anybody despite his actions as the head of the CIA in that agency surveilling. Feinstein has a record here. One wonders why anyone listened to her when they started talking about a special counsel, for crying out loud.
Right, and this is kind of what the Congress does. They would rather be compromised than embarrassed. And she just said, look how embarrassing this is. The Chinese must be laughing at us. And I think they are. I think the Chinese are laughing all the way to the bank when this guy is still out there in public life with no consequences.
Well, maybe this explains something else, Luke, that's worth pursuing, and that is, maybe the Chinese had so much on her that she was incapable of giving up her access or in any way thwarting the many sources at the CIA that she had access to and who were sharing intelligence with her and her committee. This looks very dangerous and potentially extraordinarily explosive.
Yes, and look at how the FBI handled it. They merely told her what they had learned and allowed her to handle that. Contrast that to what they did with Donald Trump when they basically infiltrated the campaign instead of just going to him and saying, look, there may be problems with your staffers. We wanted to make you aware.
This whole thing is turning into a carnival. We've got spies in senators' offices driving around. Who knows what they got. But okay, we've got one of the closing clips here, and then we're going to make some comments about Alan Jones and his trials and tribulations, and we fully support Alex Jones, that's for sure. Okay, coming up next, we've got Tammy Bruce. She introduces, she's interviewing Nigel Farage and Harmit Dhillon, and they're both giving their opinions about how to overcome this problem of these big, big social networks with a monopolistic ability to censor. Here we go now. Listen now.
I'm Tammy Bruce, filling in for Tucker this evening. It's great to be back with you. You know, it's like the early 2000s again. Rosie O'Donnell has been having another meltdown over Donald Trump.
This guy is in no means mentally stable enough to run this country, and he should be impeached, and every congressman who hasn't filed those articles should lose their job.
Oh, well, there you go. We have more of that just ahead, plus Black Lives Matter crashing a police officer's own wedding.
Aaron, I just wonder if you started planning your wedding before you killed Stephon Clark or after, and how you've been sleeping since March 18th. And I know this is supposed to be the happiest day of your life. He will not have that opportunity ever.
But first, tech companies are taking the lead in suppressing any voices that dissent against the left. In the past few days, Apple, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, and other companies have all banned Alex Jones from using their platforms. Also, Twitter purged various libertarian accounts. Instagram temporarily banned Tommy Robinson. Facebook took down a GOP candidate's ads for allegedly being offensive. And Democratic Senator Chris Murphy says mass censorship is needed to ensure, quote, the survival of the democracy, end quote. I guess he doesn't realize the irony there. Who's next? Well, on MSNBC, some say Twitter should ban the president.
Trump has insulted someone via Twitter at least 487 times. Is there a point in which Twitter says, this is a violation of our ethics, we're going to shut you down?
I think there probably is a Rubicon he could cross, but he hasn't crossed it yet, for Twitter at least.
Well, let's have this conversation now. Nigel Farage once led the UK Independent Party and spearheaded the Brexit campaign. He joins us now. Nigel, thanks for coming up with us.
Thank you.
Look, obviously, here's the issue. This is nothing new, right? We've seen this happening for quite some time. Even Diamond and Silk is a very good example on Facebook. But you've got an op-ed in USA Today, and you've got a very interesting idea about perhaps how we can start to approach this kind of banning and this assault on conservative ideas on social media. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has always claimed that Facebook was a platform for all ideas. Fine. You know, in doing that, he says, I'm not a publisher, I'm just a means of people putting out their messages. You know, whatever you think of Alex Jones and InfoWars, and, you may say, hey, this guy's a bit out there. The point is, he's got a big following, he has an opinion, and if you believe in free speech, if you believe in your First Amendment rights, people should be allowed to do this. I would say that by banning Jones, by shadow banning many others, Facebook and others are now effectively becoming a publisher, and that means, because they're taking editorial decisions, they should be open to being sued as other media organizations are.
Now, I would argue, because, look, we're all looking at how to find some balance here, because we do clearly see it's unfair. We see ranging from congressmen being shadow banned to celebrities who have the wrong opinions, might be somewhat conservative, that we're trying to find a framework, especially with mainstream media being 85% liberal, and we see that push. But we're the content in social media, which gives us an edge. But let me suggest, though, that some of the argument by Twitter and what they're doing is they're saying that these comments violate their standards. And if we open it up to, let's say, lawsuits for libel, wouldn't it make it even more difficult to have speech? Wouldn't more people be banned? Wouldn't there be more people suspended?
No, because if you're a platform for all ideas, you are not a publisher. That is the point. And what Zuckerberg and the other tech giants are trying to do is they're now trying to have it both ways. On the one hand, they claim, you know, we're not publishers, we're not open to libel, because we let everybody give their opinion. But on the other, they now, in a very sinister way, are starting to ban and shadow ban people. I mean, take, for example, on Facebook, PragerU, an organization that I've spoken for. I've been to their events.
They do great work.
They do amazing work. Yeah. I mean, their videos have been seen by tens of millions of people. They now, on Facebook, have 88 of their videos that are now very much put to the back of the list. They're very hard to access, including ones on Christianity, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So we've gone way beyond the bounds. What is needed now is a Bill of Rights for people using the internet. You know, let's give people access, let's give people rights, and if we can't get that, let's make sure we now redefine Facebook, YouTube and Twitter as publishers who are liable, as are Fox News or the Wall Street Journal or anybody else, to the content they put out.
Yeah, look, we've got to find a way to push back. And one of the strengths we have here is that we are the content, right? And there's a sense also that we're willing to put up with anything because our lives now, Nigel, are so intertwined, right? With Twitter, with Facebook, social media in general.
Yeah.
It is the new modern way to communicate. And my concern, of course, is that we don't want them to go away, and yet, ironically, they're private public companies. They're not a government. They can do as they please. But I think the power is, as an example, this conversation, our being able to have a point of view and make sure everybody knows exactly what's going on. Because since we are the content, we can at least push back and make a difference there. Nigel, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Great job. Now, look, we've got to find some way to be able to push back. Harmeet Dhillon is the perfect person to speak with about this tonight as well. She is a civil rights attorney. She represents James Damore, who was fired by Google for his personal views. She joins us now. Harmeet, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Tammy. Happy to be here.
Now, so what do you think of Nigel's proposal about holding social media accountable as publishers to where they'd be liable on issues like defamation, et cetera? I feel that would be kind of even more chilling because they're not the government, obviously. They're not compelled by the First Amendment to not act or to protect our rights. What's your take on how conservatives can protect themselves and push back in this regard?
Well, I actually agree with Nigel. Sorry, Tammy. I think it is way past time for us to do that. And what Nigel is talking about is that these social media companies are all hiding behind the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, which gives them safe harbor, gives them immunity from being sued if they act as a platform, not as a publisher.
Right.
The minute they become a publisher and censor what they do and what they don't, just like a magazine, just like Newsweek or whatever, they can be held liable just like those publications. Now, what these social media platforms have done is they have absolutely, with their digital advertising, sucked the life out of traditional journalism so that, you know, the traditional journalism outlets are on their last legs. They're teetering into extinction. And they're the places where they actually can get sued. If they do defamation, if they publish libel, they can be held liable, but these other platforms cannot. Mm-hmm. So between their market power, which I think is something that the DOJ should look at with antitrust regulation, and with their, frankly, false advertising to being open to everybody, which Twitter promises, Facebook promises, and, you know, YouTube to a certain degree promises, although they don't pretend to do that anymore, they're violating the law. And so, you know, setting aside the First Amendment, I agree with you, this is not a First Amendment issue so much as a breach of contract and issue involving other regulations. Some of the other things that conservatives can do is that we need to have members of Congress look at this Communications Decency Act issue, pass legislation. But we already have some government regulations in place that could help us. We have the Federal Trade Commission. We have the Federal Communications Commission. They could both take a hand in looking at the uneven application of the rules to these different
But, Harmeet, you know, I get very nervous. I'm not a libertarian. I'm not even a Republican. But when we start seeing, and I think regulations can be very good. You know, we've seen that when it comes to the environment, that government does have a role, but albeit a very limited one. When we start talking about government agencies deciding who has to be heard
and what must be done. I start thinking of things like the Fairness Doctrine, which made talk radio impossible to have. I worry about, again, this notion that when you're dealing with private slash public companies, but they're not the government at the same time, Google had a very big role in government, involved with Barack Obama's administration. They themselves, the market share, the value of them, are bigger than some countries. I mean, Apple became like the first time the $1 trillion traded company. Are you not concerned about government involvement in this marketplace framework where I think personal activism as the content producers can help make the difference on?
Well, of course I'm concerned, and frankly, government involvement as a conservative is the last resort, but sometimes it is necessary. So, for example, where we have doctrines that require equal access to certain platforms, for example, you have Facebook censoring Elizabeth Heng's ads when the incumbent's not censored. That is, to me, virtually an in-kind contribution by the platform to one side over the other. We can't have that in our system under our current laws. I'm not saying new laws. I'm just saying apply the current laws to the situation. So there's that. The other thing is that, conservatives can fight back in the courts or, as you say, we're the content. But, I'm afraid it's a little naive to say that. Unfortunately, we've had many years of American consumers acting like sheep. You know, they think that Google is free.
Things
are free. And now we're in chains.
Control
our voices.
We have to wrap it up now. I think this conversation is an indicator that things are changing. And thank goodness for work like yours, Harmeet. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I believe the answer is the Anti-Trust Sherman Act. And it's administered by the Federal Trade Commission. And I think what we need to do is start going against them with antitrust actions. And I think we'd have to find plenty of people to do that. Okay. We're going to end with some comments on what's been going on here. We've got QAnon. He says we have the servers. I think they're saying that the government, Trump's government, has the servers, and they're going to be looking at those. And what servers, we don't know for sure. There was reported a Department of Justice plane, this is rumor, spotted in Little Rock twice this week. And it said they were loading some kind of documents into the plane, but we don't know for sure if that's accurate. Okay, my closing comments will have to do with Alex Jones, his trials and tribulations. And let me just tell you one thing about Alex. Alex has been a leader in exposing this new world system, this new world order, this new world government. And it's a really tyrannical government that's being built. And I'm describing it as the bottom. They're bringing these people are behind world communism for the lower level masses. And they're working on some kind of a financial, industrial, corporate, fascist capstone. But Alex has expended time and money and risk, his life and his family, security, to do this and so forth. Where what happened was Megyn Kelly came down and started interviewing him, and she brought this Sandy Hook thing up. Well, that was a trap. He should have avoided that. He should have never had her down here to start with because she's a snake, okay? She went back and did some editing in this and cut his head off and made him appear to be a very, very diabolical, aggressive person in talking about Sandy Hook and defaming somewhat the families or children or whatever that died there. We don't have the full story. My view has always been the government's version of this is not correct. We just don't know for sure exactly what happened. There were many inconsistencies that appear in the story that you could drive a 18-wheeler through. So that's my opinion. Now let's get back to Alex Jones. Alex Jones has done a wonderful job in trying to reveal to the public at large what's really going on. And he, along with Trump, have come out with some very, very insightful things. Assange had done some things, too. And all of these people that were whistleblowers, and there's a long list of those. But anyway, Alex is undergoing all kinds of lawsuits now that some of these people, parents with Sandy Hook children, have against him. But also, he's been closed off of several of the major social networks. And you've got Google that's been closing him down and YouTube's and so forth. and then Facebook. And there appears to be, there might be some collusion, the word collusion, among some of these. There might be. I don't know that for a fact. But he's alleging through some of his broadcasts that there might have been some planning to take him down. He's portraying himself now as a canary in the coal mine, as he's out there being taken down, and he's telling us what's going on and what the future has to store for the conservatives. What appears to be going on is that the liberal left that the same people that were behind Hillary are behind taking him off and other conservative voices on the internet. And they want to sway the midterm elections so that they get a majority into the House and then they can take an impeachment vote against Trump. But also what's more important than the impeachment vote, if they do win the House, would be that they could reorder and control these committees. These committees that have been out here, like Nunes's committee and so forth, and Gowdy's committee, have been on the cutting edge of exposing really what's been going on with the surveillance of Trump before and after the election, and what's continuing to become a police state. So the Republicans and their leadership on these committees have done a tremendous service for this country. The Democrats on there, Adam Schiff is one that comes to mind, has been a great disservice to this country. And this is what's going on now, is that there's a battle for the U.S. representatives that will be elected this coming November. And if for some reason the Democrats get the majority into the House, then they're going to dismantle all these different, as much as they can, and they can do a lot of it. They're going to dismantle some of these investigations that are underway. Now, that doesn't mean that there's already something out there, and as long as if Trump is in office, he can control the Department of Justice. There were ramblings now from some of his tweets this morning and today that he may go after in declassifying the McCabe, I think is what he was saying, some of the emails that McCabe had and other people. So there's rumblings that if he's being influenced to take off the classification of all of these documents, except when it might harm some ongoing investigation or someone's life could be threatened by revealing or declassifying some of these documents. If he declassifies, and I'm for that, he should declassify all these documents, and especially the FISA applications that were put forward with phony information. If he does that, then the jig is up for them, and the public can see readily, and we can objectively see whether you're a Democrat and you're loyal to the Democratic Party and you voted for Hillary and all that, or whether you're a Republican and you voted for Trump and are loyal to that faction. We all need to be able to see these documents as they appear in their really original raw form. And then we can make a decision as to whether or not, you know, who did what, when, and where. I think this will eventually, if this is done, if these are declassified, it's going straight to Barack Obama. Barack Obama appears to be, and this is not proof yet, this is my opinion, but Barack Obama, along with Susan Rice and others, and Samantha, Power, and many of these other people that were involved in unmasking and all this, appear to be behind some of the written in, and even Brennan. John Brennan could be one of the instigators of this originally. But those are some of the opinions that we have floating around the internet and some of the conservative sites. Now, we can't let the social networks take off all the conservative opinion off of these networks. We must fight. And the only way that I think we can bring some action, we need to file a lawsuit and get a temporary injunction against the social network to stop them from any further, censoring and taking off. But also, we need to have all of those that have been taken off to be reinstated and to view this case and make a total judgment sometime in 2019. We need to have everyone reinstated so that it does not affect. So we have an equal voice on all of these social networks and all these internet networks, that will have an equal voice, not only coming from Alex Jones, but from the liberal left also. And I'm just a small voice in millions of different broadcasters out there. But I think if we reverse somewhat and cancel out some of these cancellations and banning of these people off and taking off the net and reestablish them and onto the net, and I think that would give us a level playing field. I think possibly Trump could do it through executive order, and also there could be a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit that is filed seeking a temporary injunction against Facebook and Google and others and YouTube and so forth, the major ones up there that did take off Alex and others. So I think that would be overall the best solution. We have a tremendous dynamic of a crushing organization out here, and I've always here lately, I've described it somewhat like Spectre. You see that the corruption in our government and on multiple levels is so great that we can't even get documents from some of the agencies and so forth, the FBI and the Department of Justice, that should have been readily available to any congressional oversight committee that was doing any investigation. And this is what we're up against now. We're up against a really gigantic machine. It resembles somewhat a Spectre type of machine. And it appears to me to have very criminal, international criminal cartel characteristics. And it looks like many of these people have been trading in human trafficking, and there's pedophilia everywhere. There's drugs and there's big money and money laundering going on. And it's just a big money power, very evil, diabolical dynamic that has unfolded. And the money has become so great. It started out with the hundreds of thousands into the millions, then it got into the billions, and now they are actually plundering whole countries, it appears to me. It's like they used to mug some old lady on the street and steal her handbag, right? Well, they mug whole countries now, and they plunder whole countries and their treasuries, and then they put in their own, dictatorial yes men in there and rule from there on. And just incorporate that into this cartel of crime and so forth, so to speak. I want to thank everyone out there this evening for listening. And we're just trying to bring a glimmer of truth to some of these situations. But this people like Adam Schiff, he's a propagandist, in my opinion. He spews forth is a bunch of half-truths and so forth, and he's not good for this country. So anything he says, I think you have to scrutinize very closely. And most of the time, it's not right on, and it's not truthful enough. So anyway, that's what I'm going to close with. And thank you very much for listening and putting up with us over the years. Well, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I will have been broadcasting 12 years on November 1st of this year, which is just two and a half months off. So we want to thank everyone out there we want to thank all the patriots, and we especially want to thank Alex Jones for all the fine work that he's done over the years. He has risked everything, fortune, family, his life, everything, to try to give us a glimmer of insight into some of these problems. I view the world as a very delusional system, and I think that's really the way to view it. And when you can look at it and see it that way, then you can begin to understand that we are mixed up. We have half-truths that we're making decisions based on, and we just don't get a full truth about anything sometimes. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. And you can find us at thesecrettruth.com, www.thesecrettruth.com. Good night.